in from the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the pharmaceuticals or the medicine moved to be single molecule, single target. And the reason, because first of all, it's very simple. Second, you can have an IP on that. You can protect it on the commercial side. And it's a balance between the two of them, you know, the business side that push for that, because what I can protect, I can make a lot of money and from that. And from the other side, it's simple. You can understand why it's working, what exactly dose to give, what is the, and it's for thousands of years, the medicine lay on nature, you know.
Welcome to the Totanic Connection Show. My name is Kevan Davani. My very special guest is Professor Dr. David Mairi, also called Daddy Mairi. Thanks so much for your time and coming on my show. How are you doing?
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm doing fine in this strange, weird world situation, but still doing
Indeed,
fine.
indeed. Let me just give you, give my listeners, our listeners, a little bit of background. David Mairi, a PhD, is an associate professor at the Faculty of Biology at the Technion Institute. That's the Israel Institute of Technology, and a member of the Technion Integrated Cancer Center. Dr. Mairi holds a MSc in biochemistry and a PhD in plant biotechnology from Tel Aviv University, and he conducted a post doctoral fellowship at the Ontario Cancer Institute, where he focused on tumor invasion and metastasis. Upon completion of his postdoctoral fellowship, Dr. Mairi took a position at the Technion Israel Institute of Technology, where he heads the Laboratory of Cancer Biology and Cannabinoid Research. And at the moment, maybe you can add a little bit of details. Professor Mairi's lab investigates the therapeutic potential of phytocannabinoids with focus on the anti-tumor effects of cannabinoids. And then on top of that, he's operating the cannabis database project, and his lab is currently involved in a lot of clinical trials covering diverse aspects of cannabis treatment, such as colon disease, pain prevention, cancer treatment, and epilepsy. Now, Professor, first I want to, tell you a little bit why we're doing this. Our show, Botanic Connection, is about of course, all about education, but it's because of to be frank, we have a very strange schizophrenic legal situation in Austria, where this is why I envy, the scientific and very rational ethical position that the Israeli researchers such as yourself or Professor Mechoulam have been taking for so many decades now. And it just, for me, not comprehensible why, patients, people who are really sick, who need help, who need treatment, are being denied, the very essence of a natural plant, the holistic properties of a natural plant, cannabis. They're being still stick. We have the year 2020 in these crazy times, and patients are still being stigmatized, criminalized, and the experts who are being the task of giving experts' opinion, they're either, I don't know, biased or somehow a very close relationship with pharmaceutical companies. So, I just want to, have your position, your thoughts. Why do we have this, before we go into the scientific and research topics, why do you think we have this situation right now?
You know, it's a complicated issue. It's not black and white. Physician, and I'm teaching in the medical school, you know, they have a very important role, and the role is to find the best treatment to their patients. And I believe, you know, that most of the physician, and again, I'm teaching and I know them, are people that coming with a lot of ideology to help the patient. They are good people, very good people, you know. And they want to find the best treatment for their patient. So I think that deniable or the block is not coming from evil things or from you know, pharma behind it. They learn in a certain way how to treat a patient for years, and they will learn it in a very, very, very accurate way. They need to calculate a lot of parameters. Okay, you are male, 45 years old, you are bald, you suffer from high sugar in the blood, you have heart problems, and you also have a kind of inflammation. What will be the best treatment that I can tell you? And they're doing this calculation on data that they learn how to calculate. And now you're coming and you're telling them, look, you learned 7 years in university, then you did another 3 years internship and another 5 years to be an expert. Forget from everything. I don't know why it's working, but it's working, give it. So this is a problem, you know, you're taking the roots of their, or they safe, the safe place of what they know to do, and you say, trust me, it's working, you don't need to know whatever you learn. And this is not an easy a decision for a physician to throw the basic or the solid concrete that he's standing on of his knowledge. And this is the major obstacle. We don't know in most of the cases why cannabis is working. And more than that, we don't know which cannabis is working. It's kind of a, you know, a trial and error. Try this is not working, try this is not working, right? And this is not a way physicians know to work. It's a problem. So to break this wall, it's not easy. From the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the pharmaceuticals or the medicine moved to be single molecule, single target. And the reason, because first of all, it's very simple. Second, you can have an IP on that. You can protect it on the commercial side. And it's a balance between the two of them, you know, the business side that push for that, because what I can protect, I can make a lot of money. And from that, and from the other side, it's simple. You can understand why it's working, what exactly dose to give, what is the... And it's for thousands of years, the medicine lay on nature, you know, whether it's using plants or algae from the sea or, you know, scorpions from, you know, it's based on the nature. But when you move to be single molecule, single target, It's moved to be more a synthetic and more commercial. And for many years, around 80 years, the pharma and the medicine walk this way. But there was few walls or few ceilings that they couldn't break. And in the last 10, 15 years, and cannabis is one example, but I think the major one and the one that opened the door and the window, there is the polypharmacology. When you're saying, if I can't break this wall, I will try to attack it from different angles. So there are a few diseases, and cancer, it's one of them, that for years, we don't succeed really to solve the problem. Cancer, it's a given name to hundreds of different diseases, and there is types of cancer that there is a cure for them or there is a medicine, but in most of the cases, we're still throwing atomic bombs. We call them, radiation or a chemotherapy. But this is, let's kill everything and then hope the patient will survive. We don't know how to treat. We're just killing everything. And so cancer is one example, but I think the most known example was the HIV. Or the AIDS. In the HIV, this virus, this complicated virus, you know, the COVID-19 is a simple virus. In a year, half a year, there will be a solution for that, because if you understand the biology, it's a simple virus. When you're talking in the HIV, this is a complicated virus sitting in the immune system, very, very problematic. So for years, they tried to find a solution, but they find there was a one medicine that helped in 20%, and one medicine that helped in 30%, and one medicine that did a little bit. None of them really solved the problem. until there was one guy that came and said, you know what, let's make from all of them a cocktail and try to attack the disease, the virus from different angles. Maybe this won't survive. And this today, the treatment for the HIV patients, it's a cocktail of different compounds. On that idea, there is other diseases that we are trying to attack it, what we call polypharmacology, that we are trying to attack that from different angle. So different molecules, they attack the same protein or different compound, they attack different pathways, but create a complicated action on the cell, on the virus, whatever. Plant is polypharmacology in-house. You know, and cannabis is an amazing an example for that, that have more than 140 phytocannabinoids that are interacting with the endocannabinoid system. There are terpenoids and flavonoids, and all together, you're getting very complicated action in one box. And the problem is to understand and to solve this complexity. But today we understand, at least I think that I understand it in my lab, that it's few compounds binding different receptors, creating a complicated action on the cells, and this is what we call the entourage effect, or the whole plant action, which you don't get it if you're taking just one molecule. So if to coming back to your question, the problem that we don't understand this complexity yet, and this creates a fear.
Mm-hmm. You know, there is a fundamental problem which I've been told also by other doctors who are, you know, sort of more or less specialized in cannabinoid treatment. They say that, you know, for so many decades, for such a long time, medical students, people in the medical profession had never been taught anything about the endocannabinoid system. So I think it also has educational roots, or the lack of education, or the lack of, you know, knowledge and comprehension. But now, you know, we have the year 2020, and now they've also, I don't know, let's say, whoever that, whatever institutions or pharmaceuticals, they've submitted an application to the European Commission to even put CBD on the level of THC. To prohibit CBD. I mean, it's really, from my perspective, totally insane, and I don't think it will be successful. But just the mere fact that they're trying even to, restrict the usage or make CBD illegal, is a warning sign, I think, for our times. Are there any diseases, doctor, that where you would say that, you know, it's, we have such a, you know, a huge lack of knowledge or lack of effectivity? I mean, would you say there are some diseases where there's also, you know, more than enough research results or studies done where, you know, where you can't say anymore there, you know, there's a controversy, but then other diseases where you know, a lot of research still has to be done?
So I would start with the beginning of what you said. At least in Israel, most of the medical school is teaching today courses of about the endocannabinoid system. In Israel, it's more conceptable, or we because Rafi Meshulam is doing this research from the 60s, and he was always very important scientist in Israel. He was the dean of the medical school. He was the head of the university, Jerusalem University. He wasn't it's not that we discover him when he was 90. He was always important scientist in Israel. And so the concept of the endocannabinoid system, or the research in cannabis, was in Israel from ever, okay? And not from ever, but at least from the 60s. And I think it was more easier for us, the scientists, to take it into the, you know, to the middle of the scene, or to make it more central. So today in Israel, all the medical school have at least one course of endocannabinoid system. I am teaching in courses for physician, nurses, pharmacies, So there is at least 8 courses in Israel a year that I'm teaching in them, which teach physicians that are already, you know, expert in that, but taking a course that it's out of the hospital, but a course for physicians for the cannabis and the endocannabinoid system. So at least in the education in Israel, there is a big improvement. And again, this is open the physician to be open to also to treat when they understand that there is a logic behind it. It's not stoners. There is endocannabinoid system. There is a receptor. It's responsible for sleep. It's responsible for feeling appetite. It's responsible for feeling pain. So it makes sense that the cannabis will help that. It make, when you make the sense behind that, it's much easier for them to accept it. And, you know, at least once a week, I think I'm lecturing in hospitals in Israel, at least once a week. In department, and then and you see the big change in the last 3 years. If 3 years ago people told me on my dead body that in my department we will treat with cannabis, today nobody is. There is no department that not treating with cannabis in Israel, or at least have the patients that have prescription for cannabis. The question, if I understand right, your question was, if there is diseases that we know for sure and there is enough science to be sure that cannabis is helping, and there is diseases that still there is a lot of research to do. So the answer is yes. I think in epilepsy, there is no doubt, you know, it's cut clear, and there is enough clinical trials that have been done. But also it's very easy. You have a child that try 5 different medicines, nothing helped him. He have 40 seizures a day. Now we're taking cannabis without THC and he's seizure free. You can't argue with that. It's, you know, it's in your face. You can't argue with that. And there is 37% success in kids that are resistant to medicines and cannabis help them. So I think epilepsy is very, very strong indication. Also, you know, GW already passed the FDA on treatment epilepsy with their product. So it's also even been, have the stamp from the FDA that cannabis is reducing seizures in epilepsy. I think reducing pain, nausea, increasing appetite, and all these side effects of cancer treatment, at least in Israel, it's very acceptable. And there is few clinical trials that show that this is a good treatment. Pain, inflammation, all the autoimmune disease, we understand the mechanism, and for that reason it's very acceptable. I think there is many neurodegenerative diseases that we still didn't touch, and the cannabis is very effective. From dementia and Alzheimer, in my lab we have amazing results with Alzheimer. We literally eliminating Alzheimer in mice. Unfortunately, mice are very different. Their brain is very different from our brain. So it's still not in humans, but at least in mice, I can eliminate the Alzheimer with phytocannabinoids, and I already understand the mechanism, also why it's doing that. But also other neurodegenerative diseases, I think cannabis will be very, very effective. I think all the diseases that are related to our immune system, like multiple sclerosis, ALS, many autoimmune diseases that we didn't touch, I think cannabis for sure is affecting strongly on the immune system. And for that reason, there is a lot to do on that space. But you know, in general, and I'm saying that in my last lectures, usually, if you ask me where I see the cannabis in 5 years, I see 2 different roads. I see products that are treating specific illnesses, very accurate product for very accurate indication. These compounds or this combination or this strain in this way of growing, but very accurate to reduce seizures in epilepsy. This and these molecules treating leukemia, you know, very accurate products or very accurate molecules in very accurate combination to treat specific illnesses. And I see a product that are treating quality of life. So I think one of the major effects of cannabis is that it's affecting quality of life as a general. Okay, and what I mean by that, I need to explain. The endocannabinoid system, it's a homeostatic system. It's sitting in every cell in our body. I'm not familiar with any cell in our body that don't express endocannabinoid receptors and producing endocannabinoids. So it's actually controlling and doing homeostasis in or balancing most of the systems in our body. And it's kind of a very moderate effect. So in every system in our body, we have a very severe or strong effect. And we have the endocannabinoid system to do the fine tuning. It's not true for everything. It's not true for all the systems. But in general, I will say that way, okay, if we're not eating for 2 days, our intestine is shrinking, sending hormones to our brain to eat. And this is very strong effect. When you're not eating for 2 days, you are hungry, you are angry, you have a bad breath, everything is very strong because your body is under stress and you need to eat. But this is specific hormone. The endocannabinoid system is very minor. It's for the appetite. It's for, you know, it's for eating dessert. It's when you're moving near a dish and smelling the smell of the dish, it's increase your appetite. This is a delicate. And if we're talking about pain, we have the strong and severe system, which is the opioid system. You know, if you are under a accident, car crash, and you wounded severely, the body will produce opioid and you will be totally stoned. Your body needs to survive life. You want to reduce the heart beating, that you won't move, everything. It's taking you off, that you won't feel the strong pain. But this is a very severe action. But now if you're just touching something hot and your hand jump, this is very specific action, very specific location, this will do the endocannabinoid system. So we need to understand that the endocannabinoid system, it's very localized in places, usually the action, and it should be moderate. That's what it knows to do. And the cannabis affect many systems because now you don't take one compound in specific location, you're taking many compounds that are going to all of your body, and it will affect a lot of systems, but very moderate. So it's a little bit affect your sleep, a little bit. A little bit to increase your appetite, a little bit make you relax, a little bit improve your mood, everything small, small gaps. But altogether, you're getting something very holistic and strong. And I think there will be arm of product that people will take it just to improve their quality of life, to sleep a little bit better, to have a little bit less pain, to have a little bit better mood. And there are groups that it's fit to them. PTSD patient, post-trauma disorder, you know, they have a problem to sleep. They have anxiety, they have nightmares, and all of these, the cannabis is improving a little bit, but altogether you get something better. Think about elderly people. Okay, my mother, she's 82 years old, and in 2 hours I need to take her to a physician, literally, okay? So, She has a problem to sleep. She's not sleeping as good as she was sleeping. She's suffering from pain or from her knee and from her back. She don't have the appetite that she had before, you know. She don't have a good mood. She's 82 years old. She's very smart. She knows that she won't live to 200, you know. And altogether, her quality of life is going down and down and down every year that passes. And why not to take a product that is, you know, a natural product that a little bit will help her to sleep, a little bit will help her mood, a little bit will help her appetite, a little bit will reduce the pain, instead of take a whole meals of pill, one pill for sleep, one pill for appetite, one pill for that, she can take one thing that help a little bit in everything, but altogether, she's much, much, much better. So I think there will be product for that.
Yeah, this is, this is again this fundamental difference in the situation Israel or in Austria or maybe even Germany. But in Germany, they're even more advanced since 2017. This is what I'm saying. You have a much, you have an unbelievably holistic approach, and you're talking about like the natural essence, the natural, healing properties, the holistic plant of cannabis. People over here in Austria, we don't even have access to the medical cannabis plant, to the, to the flower, to the essence of it. So under certain conditions, you can get a prescription from a, specialized doctor in cannabinoids, like dronabinol, but that's a, synthetic derivation. So this is the sad part of it. So this is, I'm saying, the legal situation doesn't even allow patients. The question I always ask, how much suffering does a patient have to endure in order to be allowed, which they still can't, to be allowed to access a medical cannabis. The natural plant, and all you can get is under certain conditions, get access to a, synthetically derived, cannabis extract, which is not holistic in its properties. So the other question I was always also because you said, people wanna, some people wanna just increase the quality of life. So do you see like a blurring line between like healing and curing and preventively, preventing like preventively, preventively like consuming or cannabis, which you don't have to smoke, of course, but you can, eat it or have drops or oil or whatever essence, and somehow prevent diseases in that way.
So, in general, in medicine, we're not curing diseases. In general, like if there is a bacteria or virus, we know how to kill it. Okay, so if you have an infection from bacteria, you're taking antibiotics, you kill it, you're curing. Okay, if it's virus, you can kill it, you can cure it. Really, diseases, we usually not curing. We are treating the disease or improving the quality of life or preventing the next burst. Okay, it's true for all the diseases you can think about. You have heart disease, you're not curing the heart disease, you're just treating that. You're taking pills that keeping the heart to beep right or whatever. If you have IBD, intestinal bone inflammation, you're taking steroids or pill that keeping it low. We usually not curing diseases, unfortunately. We're curing when we know to replace the engine. You have a heart implantation instead of your heart, maybe you can fix it. But we're mechanic. We don't when we can cut or take out or connect back, that's fine, but we're usually not curing. So cannabis is on the same level. I don't see cannabis curing diseases. It will help the patient to maintain the disease and to live better. That's it, usually what medicines are doing. And cannabis is no different. I think the advantage of cannabis, the major advantage of cannabis as a medicine, it's the low risk. So patients are coming to me and said, well, this is our rights to get the medicines that we are choosing. This is not right. You're not getting the hospital laying in the emergency room and say to the physician, I want this and this and this from the shelf. You never do that. You don't have a right as a patient to decide which medicine. It's not right. I don't familiar any country that the patient have the rights to choose his medicine. Okay. And this is a basic right. If you have the right to commit suicide or not commit to suicide, it's a philosophic a question about society. Okay, and how much you keep the society and how much that. And it's the same thing. I don't think that everybody think that there is a right to take opioids, even though it's a natural plant. You can go grow poppies and take opioids, right? Why not? Why it's not our option or legal to do that, or psychoactive mushrooms, it's open to bigger questions. I do think that because the difference between the poppies and opiates and the psychoactive mushrooms or other things, that in cannabis there is a low risk. What is the risk? What you are risking? That you will be stoned for 3 hours and then you will be right? Like, there is no overdose, okay? And the risk, there is risk. There is people that have getting schizophrenia, or there is something called hypermesis that people are starting to throw out without ability to stop. And there is risk, but this risk is very, very, very low. These are minor effects. And let's say irreversible problems are so rare, so the risk is very low. And then there is the question, why not to try? It's not working for every patient, okay? If people think that if you have pain, you will take cannabis, that's it, you don't have a pain, it's not working that way, okay? Just 50% of the patient are having a pain reduction, 50% not, and not all the strains of cannabis affecting. And that. But this is true for every medicine. And the question is, why not to try? If you are suffering, why not to try to improve your quality of life? If it's not working, okay, move on. If it's working, you're not risking much. And you don't need to take strains that have high THC to be stoned. There is strength of high CBD. There is strength of high CBG. I have a strain in my lab that is very effective to many things that have zero THC, zero CBD. Okay, it's a high CBG strain. They're strained with high CBC. So there are many types of plants. You don't need to be stoned every time that you mm-hmm. take cannabis. You can take cannabis on the acid form, like before the carboxylation, which you don't feel the effect. But let's say in Alzheimer, we know that it's very effective, or in prostate cancer. So it's wider than, just taking being stoned and
right,
so on.
Right.
And the question is, why not to try?
But is THC... In a specific balance or combination, would you say in some instances, or in some conditions, is actually necessary for it to be effective with other whatever phytocannabinoids, CBD, and
it's the psychoactive compounds, but it's also the most potent active phytocannabinoid at least that we see. So in many diseases or action, you need the THC. You can't run from that. So if you look on pain reduction, it's just strains with high THC. It might be not just the THC. It might be not the THC, but it's THC strains. Okay, and there are other diseases or things that you need the THC. So. My lab was working on different types of cancers, and then we have a result from breast cancer, a specific type of breast cancer that it's two compounds, but one of them is THC. So there will be places that you won't be able to run from that. The THC is very active. It's not by accident that we are being stoned. It's because it's very active. And what is affecting our body is affecting, it's there is two sides of the coin.
Right. I've been talking to, as you know, Dr. Kurt Blaas, who is, really such a strong advocate and specialist in cannabinoid. And he's actually, sort of told me to talk to you. And I also talked to the chairman of a consumer protection agency, who is a pain patient himself. And he's been taking, he has a sort of an autoimmune disorder and taking for many, many years CBD. But I asked him, if cannabis was legalized, would you then switch? And he said definitely. He would definitely switch from the whatever synthetic or just CBD to the natural plant. And this is what I'm saying. We don't even have the legal access to the natural plant with the expertise and the and the treatment of the doctor. I mean, as you say, it's the patient can't just consume something which he doesn't even really know the knowledge, he doesn't have the knowledge about. But so what Do you, I mean, how can we in Austria, learn maybe from you, or other researchers, scientists such as yourself? Like, what is it that's, what kind of message would you give to the pain patients or the doctors who are, or to the, all the advocates who are trying, to have a more rational, ethical, and human-friendly, medical condition?
So, first of all, I will separate legalization and medical treatment. Okay, there is a lot of medicines that are not legal. You need to go to pharmacy with a prescription, otherwise you can buy them. And I don't understand how cannabis can be different from that. So if a physician thinks that it's a good medicine and want to prescribe it, why it's different from opioids and other drugs that are not legal but medicine, I think. And for that I can argue with everyone and explain in the very good way that cannabis should be another medicine in the toolbox of the physician to treat his patient. Sometimes it's not the best treatment, sometimes it will be the best treatment or the second or the third in the line after the first treatment won't help. And the role of the physician and his obligation is swearing on that, okay, that he will always give the best treatment to his patient. And if cannabis is the best treatment, it's his obligation to learn about that and to be able to give that. As a country, as a physician, this and as a society, our obligation is, or we must try to help our patient as much as we can. And we need to be honest, not always cannabis is the best treatment. I'm not sure that in epilepsy it should be the first line. But of course, if you didn't succeed the first, the second, the third, then you have nothing to do. These kids that have 40 seizures a day will become retarded and usually won't survive puberty. They are dying. So how can you prevent something that can save their life? It's crazy, okay? Legalization, something else. Would you be able to just buy it in a grocery without a prescription? This is an argument about how it's affected, the society and other things. But as a prescription, why it's different from other drugs? Okay? What I see and what I'm doing in the last 3 to 4 years, I found myself without a decision, okay, it's just happening, being a gap between the holistic side, the science, and the physicians. Okay, I can speak in three languages. When you're taking, a herbalist or somebody that believe in plants and you put him in front of physician, they don't speak the same language. They can't communicate usually. I'm finding myself as a person that have a master's in biochemistry, a PhD in molecular and genetic plant biology. I was the head of the botanic gardens of Tel Aviv University and the medicinal garden for 7 years. I know every plant, what is doing and everything. And then 4 years work in a hospital doing cancer research. And today my lab is combining them. I can speak the all languages. I can speak with the grower and I understand exactly how to grow and the genetic and everything. I can speak the holistic side. I can speak the physician, and I'm finding myself closing these gaps. It's never happened to me that I'm coming to a meeting in hospital with the physicians that I'm not ending the meeting that they ask me, okay, Daddy, how can we start to work together? What you need from us? How can you, let's do a clinical trial together. Let's try to start to treat the patient and to do follow-up together. Never happened to me, and I had, I don't want to exaggerate, but more than 100 meetings like that, okay? Never happened to me that I'm not finishing with have them with me. It's just because I know to speak with the language. Every meeting like that, there is around 10 physicians, head of the department, very important people. It's always starting with the same joke. Did you brought samples? Everybody's laughing, right? Oh, that is working with cannabis. Did you brought the samples? Everybody's laughing. And then I'm starting to show the results. And around after 10 minutes, somebody is stopping me. One of the physicians said, "Oh, come on, Daddy, do you really believe cannabis can kill cancer cells? Or do you really believe cannabis can help for that?" And I'm looking and said, "I gamble my career on that. Do you think that I don't believe?" "Okay, yes, I believe. And give me another 20 minutes and you would believe too." And I'm going slowly, slowly, and explaining about the endocannabinoid system and the receptors. And we are looking on 28 receptors, and we can see 150 endocannabinoids, and the endocannabinoid doing that and that and that. And this is the phytocannabinoid. This is the molecule. You see it's binding here. You see the site is binding here. And it's starting this pathway and this pathway and doing that and that. I'm explaining to them in their language why the cannabis is so effective. And when I'm ending that, they're with me always, always, always. I never had the situation that I finished the meeting and the physician said, "Hey, Daddy, look, this is crap. We don't believe in that. This is just for stoners." Never, never. So I think we need to know how to approach the medical care, the physician, the minister of health, whatever, in order to change it. It's the way, you know, to speak with somebody. You can fight with somebody, you can knock your head in the wall, or you can find a way to reach these people. And there is a way, because there is logic, there is science behind it. It's really happening. It's just a way to explain. And I think our big success in Israel, and it's not me, it's people that come way before me. It's Rafi Meshulem and Lumir Hanush and Galoni. There was 5-6 very good scientists that did a very good work and opened the door. I'm coming with very high technology, with the hype behind me, with almost 80 scientists that working under me that create so much knowledge and interaction that every meeting I can tell something new. So this is bringing a wave. But I think in Israel, we changed totally the way physicians think, the way the ministers in the government thinks. It's totally pro-cannabis today.
Yeah. Doctor, before we just wrap up, really thanks so much for taking the time. We are observing, because my girlfriend has a grow shop, and this is one of the reasons we're doing this show, because there are people like 70, 80 or, even older years old, usually as a couple, they go into these grow shops, they buy these plants that have, less than 0.3 THC. That's what legal sort of, the small plants. Otherwise, it's illegal. That's why, we have a really, really difficult situation also with the doctors, because they cannot really even prescribe, even if they see it as a necessity. Let's say, you have somebody who has seizures. The doctor can't even prescribe if he deems it really necessary for treating the patient with a natural medical cannabis plant. So I'm hoping the pain patients, the doctors, the media, the lawmakers, they learn something from the process that is taking place actually for so many decades now in Israel. So any other, final thoughts, or where people can can find more about your research?
Oh, in the way communication works today, if you Google and you write my name, unfortunately, you will find a lot of talks. I had a TED talk that I did 3 years ago, and then other things. It's always surprising me, but there is so many things online. Also, there is the site of the lab. We're doing research in cancer, but also in epilepsy, Alzheimer's, sleep disorders, and multiple sclerosis. In all of them, there is a very important results. I'm very proud of my students and the work they are doing. And I'm happy, I'm always available if somebody, want to collaborate or want to ask something. I must say something that this is also important. I'm not a physician, and I don't know yet to help patients. Most of my patients have four legs and a tail, you know. So I'm participating today in 11 clinical trials, and when I'm saying participating, usually I'm helping the physician to run the clinical trials. I'm checking the cannabis. I'm checking the endocannabinoid system in the blood. I'm doing the follow-up, but usually it's the physician clinical trials. A lot of patients are approaching me, mainly cancer patients. You know, I have a breast cancer stage four, this and that. Which cannabis do you think I should take? Unfortunately, I don't know these answers. So, and I don't think somebody in the world know the answer. Cancer, it's a given name to hundreds of different diseases. In my lab only, I have 900 different types of cannabis, and I have just 900 because there is a limit how much I need. You know, there are thousands, and to find the right cannabis to the right cancer, it's still a lottery. We have advanced research in few types of cancers, but I still not in a place I really can help a patient. So usually after these kind of interviews, I'm getting 100 emails about, you know, my neighbor have prostate cancer and I really want to help him. I'm trying to answer people very politely, but I would be more than happy to help. You know, we all want to help. This is what we're doing, but we're on our way. We're not there yet.
No, I think really your work is really not only enlightening, but I think will inspire other, hopefully other, you know, doctors, researchers, and pain patients to go more into depth. I'm hoping, you know, to come maybe one day to Israel, but if you ever should come to Austria, please let me know. I would love to meet you in person, or maybe, you know, get together with Dr. Kurt Blas, who talked highly of you. So thank you so much again, and hope we can repeat this as a panel discussion in the very near future. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure. And thank you for everybody that listened to us. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.